Alright, there's gotta be something on.
They say the word shit like 100 times.
Make the bully drink piss.
Whoa!
What is this exactly about?
Sean's parents are basically on the verge of a divorce.
We'll come back to bite them in the ass later.
I always wonder, like, why was it always that kid's problem?
Did you see that?
But I'm sure if I'm quite drunk enough to see Meet the Beatles.
Of course you didn't. Nobody saw it. You know why? Because no one saw this movie.
It's like Avenue Q, only worse.
Yeah, it was definitely a rental for me.
On 3D, plus the IMAX 3D, plus the other theater had it.
Which was not really that hard.
Wait, where did he come from?
Internet. One of those covers of the video store, you remember?
Oh, this is that movie? Yep, of course. Yep. What in the hell is this and why is it on my TV? Yeah, I'm gonna have to catch this from the beginning.
What am I watching?
All right, so you know how at your local video store, every once in a while, if you were, like, in with the people who worked there, like, after hours when they'd be closing down, if you happened to be hanging out, you could, like, chill and help them restock the shelves and just chat about movies. Well, that's where you are now. You're in the Hollow Nine, what am I watching version of After Hours. The doors have been locked. All the tapes have been pushed back in through the slot, and I love how there's an entire generation that these, like, analogies are just totally fucking lost on. Like, they're just like, what the fuck are you talking about? It's just on Netflix.
The employees have broken into the manager's stash of beer.
Yep. There's like, or, you know, if you really want to kick it up a notch, there's a cloud in the place all of a sudden that wasn't there before. And, you know, as you're walking the aisles, you'll see one that just kind of jumps out at you. And when we were talking about our Lost Boys episode, both Gomez Not Adams here and myself decided we have to talk about Near Dark. If anybody's out there kind of scratching their head going, hey, guys, what the hell is Near Dark? Near Dark is, was this, 1991? Or no, 87.
87.
Same year as Lost Boys.
It was the other vampire movie from 1987.
They actually should have put that on the box. or the poster or something. Oh,
well,
man.
That was part of the problem, was that this movie got no publicity at the time.
Yeah. I mean,
nobody was talking about it. It didn't get any advertising. And as a result, it bombed.
Yeah.
It came out a couple months after Lost Boys.
And, I mean, there's also, I mean, a big glaring issue. I mean, I love the movie. Let's start out there. I love this movie. I'm one of those people who, like, randomly found it on DVD one day when I was sometime around 2003, 2004 maybe. Was like, what the hell is this? And I just wound up buying it because I love vampire stuff. I was, like, such a genre purist that anything that I found, I'd be like, oh, I gotta check this out. And even the cover, when you see what's his name, Bill Paxton's burned up face on the cover,
That's on your copy.
Well, no, that's on the poster too. That was out at the time. My copy has his burned out face next to the ghost images, also of Lance Henriksen, and is that Jenny Wright? She's one of the Cameron misanthropes, not misanthropes, but Cameron
Vasquez.
yes. Vasquez, and she was John Connor's foster mom in T2.
That's right. Great character actress.
Yeah. You've seen her. You know her.
The copy I have is that was obviously being marketed towards, like, let's see if we can sucker people into thinking they're buying another Twilight movie.
Yeah, but this is like way. Oh, you mean like the re-release? You're saying?
Yes.
Okay. This was for Blu-ray, which fuck you got on Blu-ray. Oh, man. I think that this is also one of those ones that I'm afraid to see what the film transfer looks like on Blu-ray, because it's, like, clearly, when you watch it, everything about it, from, like, the stock to the camera angles, it's all so 80s feeling, you know what I mean? Like,
to the soundtrack. I mean,
it's
much more 80s than Tangerine
Dream. Tangerine Dream. Jeez, dude. Caleb's Dream.
Given that this was supposed to be a Western, and it's set in Oklahoma... Really, Tangerine Dream is what you went with? You want some Hank Williams in here.
Everything was a mishmash back then. You know what I mean? Like, the music didn't necessarily match the locale as well. It was sort of like, it was also the 80s. You know, people were listening to weird shit. They were like, oh, we got to push the soundtrack like it's a separate album almost, you know? Got to make these things sellable.
But in many ways, I mean, yes, it's a very still an 80s movie, but in a lot of ways, it's kind of like the antithesis of the Lost Boys movie.
Well, yeah.
In a few ways.
It's also like more intelligent in some ways, too. It's like more of a thinking movie than just like a, wow, vampires movie. You know what I mean?
There's actually a few things I respect about this film. One was the fact that they decided to film it in flyover country.
Yeah.
They set it in Oklahoma. And the concept, I mean, at one point, you see how the vampires are trying to lure in their prey. One's posing as a hitchhiker. One's posing as picking up hitchhikers. You've got the boy, Homer, with his wrecked bike, trying to lure in the Good Samaritan to come help him out. And it's just that sort of like, on a lonely road, who are you going to run into? Could be a bunch of fucking vampires.
Yeah, it definitely, it actually played with like the whole, I think at the time, like Night Stalker and Hitcher and Hitchhiker and all those like kind of, we had some serialized horror shows back then, you know what I mean? And it played right into that. But it also was like an art film in a lot of ways too, you know? Like it definitely established the whole idea of the roving RV being not just like old gray hairs doing their retirement cross-country drive. It could be a roving band of hundreds of years old vampires. I mean, dude, Bill Paxton's name is Severin in this.
Yeah,
I was like, whoa! You've got
Homer.
It's like video games, you know?
We've got Homer, and then we've got...
is it Jesse?
Henderson's character. Jesse.
Mm-hmm.
Who fought for the South.
We lost. Oh my god, man. The characters are super cool. This is, I think, one of the things they did better in this movie than in The Lost Boys is really establish all the vampire characters, like, and give them a lot of
lines here, too.
Yeah, they had dialogue, they had moments, and more than just separate names, but you also learned about, like, where they came from. You know, Homer being this is like the pre-interview with the vampire exploration of the child, you know, adult mind trapped in an eternal child's body because they became a vampire.
Yeah, very much so. And, I mean, one of the things that is telling about this movie as well is that at no point do you hear the V word. No one ever says vampire.
It's very much like The Walking Dead and zombies. These are just like, they don't acknowledge it.
You figure it out down the line, but no, they never come out and say, this is what's going on.
Yeah, they also, I think they also don't do fangs in this movie, right? Like, isn't that one of the things, like, it's one of those weird vampire movies where they don't do the fangs, so it's more just like they bite your neck with their regular teeth and then they drink your blood, but...
Or you know, they slit your throat with a knife and let
Oh, God, I was just about to say, I forgot about that. I'm watching it in the background.
Or they cut your neck with a spur.
Mm. I hate it when they ain't been shaved.
They can pick a few ways to do it. And actually, one of the things that, just doing the contrast with Lost Boys, all the victims were kind of assholes.
Yeah, you kind of did.
You had the security guard, you had the surf Nazis, you had the guys that stole the comic books.
Surf Nazis! Oh my god.
But here, I mean, the victims were like your everyday people.
Yeah.
Like a bunch of guys, shit kickers at the bar just hanging out, wanting to have a drink.
Yeah.
It was the poor waitress who had to do shit to anybody.
Yeah, literally. And you could see she was scared from the minute they walked in, too.
The only assholes really that were in there were the
our people.
People tried to carjack Jesse and and then turns up the volume and starts laughing. It's like, oh man, not your night.
Diamondback is Vasquez, right? That's what the
yes.
I forget that's what her name. And then what's the young woman who lures in Adrian Pasdar in the beginning? So yeah, we have heroes fame, Adrian Pasdar, who when heroes it was like of near dark fame, Adrian Pasdar.
Actually, I think they didn't even bother saying that.
Yeah, I mean, has he been in other shit? This is one of those podcasts where we're going to be live Googling and live IMDBing as we talk here, but because that's what you would do if you were chilling after hours. Someone would be like, "Yo, let me pull out my phone and see." He was in Top Gun? What the fucking fuck, really? Oh my god.
He just has that forgettable face, I think. He just kind of blended into the background.
I guess. You know, he's probably one of the many fucking fighter pilots who are just like, you know, extras in that movie.
A white male extra.
He was the voice of Tony Stark in the Iron Man 3 official video game.
Good for him.
Yeah, hanging on to the coattails of Marvel right there, you know. He's also the voice of Tony Stark, Iron Man, in the Iron Man TV series from 2010. He played Black Panther in the TV miniseries of Captain America. Too bad he's not playing Black Panther in the movie.
Yeah, that's...
For obvious reasons. Oh, yes, he was on Desperate Housewives a little bit, judging Amy. But I feel like there's got to be some stuff that happened like around the time of this. Top Gun, he was Chipper. Streets of Gold. Solar Babies. All right, now we're starting. Now we're talking. Solar Babies. Made in the USA, and then Near Dark. And then Cookie. He was in the movie Cookie. I don't know if anybody remembers that Melanie Griffith treasure. Okay. What else?
That's one word for it.
Yeah, I know. Like, yeah, right. Nothing's really junk. Carlito's Way. Frankie in Carlito's Way.
Okay.
Yeah, so we'll just, yeah, well, that's a tribute to Adrian Pazdar there. Congratulations. Welcome to What Am I Watching After Hours. You can join this conversation by emailing us at hollow9podcast@gmail.com. That's the word hollow, the number 9, I-N-E, the word podcast, @gmail.com. And then when you go to find us on Twitter, it's @hollow9cast. Guess what? Hollow 9 is spelled the same way as the email address.
One of my other favorite little trivia bits for this movie was that Kathryn Bigelow really wanted to make a Western.
Yeah, oh yeah.
That's what you wanted to make.
I don't think we've even mentioned that it was Kathryn Bigelow's directorial debut yet. So, that Kathryn Bigelow. Point Break Kathryn Bigelow. Hint at movies coming up on What Am I Watching.
Hurt Locker. Oscar winner Kathryn Bigelow.
I was getting there. I was going to say Hurt Locker.
I know.
But I love Point Break. And it's chronologically next. So that's kind of...
Recovering. If we can find a third person to watch this movie with us.
Oh, for God's sake. You know, I know everybody loved Point Break, for God's sake. And when you watch Near Dark, you can see that she's a competent filmmaker. You know what I mean? Like, it definitely had the feel of... All right, maybe this isn't Lost Boys, and maybe they kind of tried to trick me into thinking it was Lost Boys because that's what studios did and still do, but much more blatantly did at the time. Bait and switch was, like, allowed, apparently. But as you watch it, like, it begins to stand on its own merits in a totally different way. Like, not really as a vampire movie, I would say, but definitely it has some Western feel to it, but it also just has that 80s action-ish type movie, like... Almost like Blade Runner. Like, it wants to have action, but it doesn't have a lot of action, you know?
Well, I mean, you've got the bar fight that happens. I mean, it's less of a fight than a massacre.
Yeah, so. Yeah, it's very one-sided. It's not... I would say what this movie lacks that Lost Boys clearly has is that whole ending fight sequence, like action set piece, where... This is like a couple little moments throughout. It's like I keep going back to Blade Runner. Blade Runner, I remember being told before I saw it, oh yeah, it's great. There's a lot of action. And then I'm like, so there's like three fucking action scenes in this, and they're not even action. Like, nothing really blows up. It's like one person maybe shoots the other person. You know what I mean? It's definitely much more of like an implied think about like what they're talking about and freak out about it kind of movie. And I feel like Near Dark is right in that territory also.
But just going back to the kind of the Western motifs, I mean, you have a standoff situation.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
With Adrian Pazdar's character and Jesse.
This is at the end. We're talking about the very end now.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're jumping all over the place, obviously.
Yeah, might as well.
And what is his name? Caleb. Oh, God. How did I
Caleb.
Caleb
right.
And Jess. Jesse Hooker. Played by Lance Harris.
You also have what I think is one of the all-time greatest come at me, bro moments. Where you've got Severin. Basically say, come at me, bro, while Caleb is going to try to run him down with a tanker trailer.
Oh, and doesn't, yeah, this is where he jumps up on the front of it and, like, punches into the engine. Like, actually, sorry, there was, for the moments it had some impressive moments. Like,
he pulls a rictus erectus before rictus erectus.
Oh, darn, I'm ripping up the sergeant, darn! That's kind of almost how, like, because he was very, right when you meet Bill Paxton's character, he's the character who's, like, in the heroes, in our protagonist's face, but has the cool hip factor, so you're like, oh, he's the guy we all want to be like, you know, he's the badass, and he's like, I'm going to separate your head from your shoulders, you're like, whoa, hi, that chick drank my blood, and now I'm freaking out, I don't know what the fuck's going on, why are you going to
separate my head from my shoulders.
Well, I didn't even do anything. Like, I have the worst hangover ever. Come on.
Your name's Severin, and you're going to separate my head from my Gotcha. Got it, coach. You advertise well, chief.
Of course, you then have Homer's introduction right after that, where he grabs the tail of his balls.
I just wanted to see what
pronounced my name.
And when he's like, I'll take these away from you or something like that. But it was almost like, to me, it's more just like, I want to see what grown-up ones feel like, because mine never get any bigger than this. Mine are child size for life. And by life, I mean eternity, since I am a vampire.
And we've been hearing the same shit for 50 years.
So never turn kids into vampires out there, guys. Any vampires listening, it's just fuck it, man. Don't do it. Find a way to have vampire babies, you know? Like, do it like an underworld. Like, they had, like, friggin' vampire werewolf, like, coitus led to a fucking baby, for God's sake.
Yeah, that just screams. That's just gonna get messy, though.
Yeah, always. It always does. Hell, it gets messy here. Like, this is definitely one of those movies where the hero joins this group, but is never 100% accepted into the group. You know, like, there's like one moment where you're like, all right, everyone kind of digs this guy. And then within like minutes of film, it like all goes right back down again. And I think that's another thing about like that maybe the Lost Boys has on this is that once the Frog Brothers and the, what are Sam and, Michael's last names. Fuck, I forget their last names. Anyway,
it doesn't matter.
Yeah, once the Frog Brothers and Sam and Michael and like Star all kind of like form their vampire hunting clique, it's like a pretty solid team. And here it's like, I don't know, we're kind of aligned with Adrian Pasdar's character because we're on the outside too. And it's just like, even that moment when he's in, he's not fully in. But it's also that he's in because he was turned into a vampire. So they're like, oh.
It's like, it's definitely one of those things where, like, he really starts to become in when he helps them escape from the motel.
Yeah.
The police have them surrounded.
And he drives the RV into the, or it's like a new RV that they found. He drives it right through the freaking wall.
He runs outside in daylight, covered up so he doesn't burst into flame, and is able to rescue the other vampires. And they're like, okay, you know what? We're going to let you live for a little bit longer now since you stuck.
You proved yourself a little bit, you know? That was like a step closer. Next, you got to off somebody. Then you're part of the Crips, yo!
Got to kill somebody to be in. But I think what was interesting for this, especially, is like, okay, so you had Lost Boys. You had the single mom with the two boys.
Uh-huh.
Here, you got the single dad.
I was going to say, I'm actually seeing scenes of this right now, so this is great that we're going into it.
So you got the single dad with the son and the daughter, and the son's kind of off doing his own thing, hitting on girls, drinking beers with his friends.
He's kind of drifting around too, right? Like, he's just driving aimlessly at the beginning, like kind of like going around cruising for chicks.
It's like you're in small town Midwest, or out west. There's fuck all to do.
It looks like it sucks. Like, I don't know how people do it. Sorry, guys. I'm not trying to be too dick about it, but holy fuck.
It's in 1987, you didn't even have the internet.
Oh, God. You know, and we're all so cursed with it that I keep saying, oh, man, we should go back to that. But when you think about places like this, oh, geez. You guys needed that shit more than we did. For real.
We had options.
Yeah. We could go into the city if we needed to. You guys are like, I put a bunch of sticks together. Let's set them on fire.
Are there cows? Wait, they're cows.
Let's tip them over. Even the Heathers were like, what the fuck are we doing?
Yes, exactly.
That's another one coming up.
I mean, there's definitely that sort of between grown up, childhood and adulthood angst a little bit with Caleb going on too, I feel.
Yeah.
Trying to find himself a little bit.
And he kind of, I think he plays that well. Like, I think at the time, Adrian Pasdar, it looks like this was definitely that era where this should have been, could have been the thing that made him like huge if it had hit. You know what I mean? Like, he was like, and he has the similar look to like, almost I would say like Lethal Weapon era Mel Gibson and even like early Brad Pitt when he comes along in about 10 years, you know, so he had the look, he had the kind of stature even. It almost looks like it's one of those cases where like this movie just failed in so many ways, including launching his career, which I'm not saying that to be critical. I'm saying that to be historically accurate, motherfuckers. So put the tweet down.
No real fault of his own. I think the studio kind of screwed this movie.
Yeah. Well, even on the disc that I've got, on the DVDs that I've got, I'm sure there's probably the same behind the scenes stuff that's on yours. Or maybe there's probably even more now that it's on Blu-ray. But I remember there was one of the, let's see if I'm trying to see, producer Stephen Charles Jaffe, or Jaffe? Dear God. Stephen Charles Jaffe. He is in an interview on the behind the scenes saying, like, talking about how he kind of, like, not necessarily read the Riot Act, but definitely, like, warned Catherine Bigelow, like, if at any time I feel like you're losing control of this, or, like, you don't have what it takes to, like, really finish directing this movie or running this movie and finishing the project till the end, I'm going to take away from you instantly. So it's like, you know, imagine that kind of level of, like, they were up her, they were fucking over her shoulder. Gonna back off and say this the nicer way. And then, I mean, when you look at the product, I think if this came out now, people would be like, fuck, that movie's cool as hell. And it definitely just missed the mark back then. I'm super happy that they let her do Point Break afterwards, because holy shit, I love that movie, and that movie's awesome and a lot more what I think the commercial audience would be kind of looking for.
Absolutely. But I also feel like the failure on this was not her.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. It's interesting that the guy would have no qualms about saying during the process they were all, like, worried, and that's the time they have to be worried the least. You know what I mean? It was more in, like, how are we pushing this to the crowd? You know, how are we how are we doing this? And I think that's why they put, like, burned up Bill Paxton on the cover, because they wanted it to look like, oh, there's some action in this. And speaking of the Western theme, the spot where they show him hitchhiking, he's, like, standing on the side of the road twirling a revolver. And, like, doing all kinds of cowboy shit, you know?
Exactly.
And they all kind of have that, like, blue jeans and leather, you know, look.
But it's also very much like, these are not the pretty vampires.
Right.
They're all kind of unwashed. They're very disheveled.
They're very realistic, right? Like, this is kind of what vampires would be like if they were just drifting around the Midwest and they, you know, didn't necessarily... It's not like they're the kind of vampires that have the stately mansion somewhere waiting for them to come back to every night. You know what I mean? They're
not even close.
They're like almost
they're nomads.
Like gypsies. Yeah, like it's like they're floating around like with no possessions and shit, whereas like I always think the vampire mythos is like if you could live forever, you really have no excuse to not amass wealth.
Except that you're killing somebody every night, and that kind of shit draws attention.
Yeah, there is that. So that's
especially if you're bumming around like little one horse towns.
Yeah,
where there isn't anybody. People are going to start noticing when we were population 50, and now we're population 49.
Yeah,
where did that
guy go? What happened?
Except there's five vampires, and now we're down to population 45.
Yeah.
So definitely that sense of like they got to keep moving. I mean, they've got their possessions pretty much close on their back and whatever they take from their victims.
And that's kind of in us. See, I don't know. I guess I always, in my mind, I guess because I've often tried to think of if I wanted to write vampire characters, how I would do it, maybe do it a little differently. But I always, like, just imagined that transition from, like, okay, it's almost like when you start a video game, like an RPG, and you're at level zero, you have zero experience points, you have no money, you have no possessions, and they just drop you on the map, and now you gotta start doing shit. And the first thing you do as a vampire is you kill somebody and pick their pocket, take their wallet, you know, and you do that for like a week, you'd amass a little bit of cash. You'd find somebody's apartment that you want to, like, take over and live in. You'd have to basically start taking people's identities, you know what I mean? And then once you amass enough, like, you start buying stuff. You need to buy, like, some property under a fake name that you control the entire history of, you know? And the only reason you could do any of this is because you're just like, fuck it, man. My arc here is 100, 200 years out, you know? I don't care if this shit takes forever. I will live until that happens. And
but here's a question. I mean, if you're a Civil War veteran, how much do you know about modern identity theft?
Well, exactly. That's the thing. You'd have to somehow you'd have to be keeping up with the times. You know what I mean? You'd have to somehow be, I guess that's why a lot of the old stories.
And And if you're busy killing somebody every night, do you really have time for that?
Well, then you need, I guess that's why a lot of the stories always involve like a Renfield type, you know? You need your like daytime drone guy who reads you the fucking paper. Like, I want the highlights, Alfred, of the paper of what's happening in the world. I'm about to go vampirize this whole area. I need to know what they're looking for. The Son
and
of
I
Sam.
Can be active from dusk till dawn.
Like,
so 15 hours for me.
And I know that's catchy as fuck, and I want you to stop using all of my phrases in your goddamn screenplays that you're selling to Hollywood, because I walk around trying to charm these women, and they're just like, oh yeah, I saw that movie, and you're like, damn it! For God's sake!
You are no George Clooney.
You are ruining my game, motherfucker. You know how hard it is? I have to hypnotize twice as hard. Twice as hard! Everybody's on all kinds of new designer drugs. They're harder to hypnotize. It's a bunch of shit.
And then when I drink them, I am high as balls.
I'll tell you what, man. I was tripping for fucking days that one time. When we went to that Burning Man, fucking first of all, how you convinced me is because we watched Near Dark, you convinced me we could go to the desert and be fine. Burning fucking man.
Liar.
Burning fucking man. Okay. Yeah,
then
that's kind of...
Then I was completely lost in the 70s because, you know... One person, like 8 years later, I find him somewhere in Los Angeles on Skid Row.
Yeah, I somehow did not burn up in the sun during that whole time. Have you seen, speaking of like how I think this is, you know, thinking about how if this movie was released now, probably would be much better received because it's sort of like an outside-the-box vampire movie to a degree.
Yeah, very
I think like there is sort of, to get away from the Twilight effect, there's sort of a resurgence in vampire stuff. I mean, at least like Vampire Diaries, the originals, that's kind of like your typical cheesier type vampire stuff that's on the CW. But when you think about movies like, oh shit, what was the movie?
The Right One In.
Yeah, well, Let the Right One In. And then there's another one that was actually more of a comedy done as a mockumentary. And it's done by, it was by Jermaine Clement and this other guy who's part of their like New Zealand comedy crew. Even Rhys Darby is in it. And it's called What We Do in Shadows.
Okay, I did not see that one.
It's been on cable a lot lately. And in fact,
that might
when
be
I,
why I haven't seen it.
When I don't think it was theatrically released. It went straight to Blu-ray. And I wound up picking it up about a month before they started playing it every fucking day on cable. So I didn't really need to buy it. But I'm glad I own it, because then when I went to Walker Stalker in December and interviewed Jay Bonansinga, it just so happened to be one of the movies he'd seen recently that's like one of his favorite movies. So it was like,
nice.
Good common ground, you know what I mean?
I can definitely see this getting a getting a remake.
Yeah.
I think there are definitely elements of it you could take to do a new movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I'd actually want to see like a straight remake done of this.
Well, you know what pisses me off is that it's always got to be that. It's like they're either going to remake it, or they're going to make a 25-year-later sequel that people are going to be like, holy shit, no. There was a first one. Why don't they just re-fucking release this in the theater now? Like, run a new promo, but re-release the old movie. And, I mean, I don't know, man. I think it's kind of like a neat experiment in that, you know, what do they got to lose? The shit already bombed on them once. You know what I mean? Like, they've sold... DVDs. To me, if they go through the effort to even put it on Blu-ray, it's the kind of thing that needs to get like some showings at some film festivals or some comic cons or something, just to kind of get the those who missed it the first time crowd. And you know that's absolutely what comic cons are full of. And then you'll have the people who have seen it a million times going, you know, I never saw this on a big screen. And holy shit, it's so much cooler. I mean, I feel like it's up to people like us to have kids and then force feed them the good shit. You know, like, listen,
pretty much.
You're watching Star Wars original theatrical cut first three episodes. And I'm talking 4, 5, and 6. Fuck 1, 2, and 3. You're never watching those. Never.
No. Not only are you never watching those, they never happened. Like,
exactly.
I'm not even telling my kids that there were that those are out there.
Going straight to fucking 7 right after Jedi is over.
It's 4, 5, 6, 7, and then we'll see how Rogue One does.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe down the road you could show them Episode 3, the only one worth even trying to force yourself to sit through, with a tall drink of water at least.
You know, if they really want to make themselves suffer through 1, 2, and 3, that's on them.
Oh, I don't know, man. I don't know. I actually just picked up the Blu-ray of Episode 7. I couldn't resist. I was telling myself, wait, you know, there's going to be some kind of mega box now. But since I don't give a flying fuck about that first.
I'm holding out. But then I've got Father's Day coming up. So
there you go. Congratulations on being able to celebrate that one. Maybe if they had like a re-release of Near Dark in the theater, you could be like, for Father's Day, that's what we're doing. I want to go see Near Dark.
Yeah, no, I'm not. Then I would be seeing it by myself.
It's also too, I think maybe because I grew up watching so much TV that all the people in this movie, all the faces are familiar. You know, like every face in this movie you've seen, including one of the guys, like the guy that Bill Paxton knocks his shot over in the bar scene. That's the guy that Schwarzenegger throws through around the restaurant in the opening of T2 when he shows up. He's the guy who's like leather jacket and boots and everything that he takes. And that's just because it's the Cameron collection, the Cameron
Bigelow.
But of
course, Bill Paxton was the punk who got his clothes stolen from originally.
In T1. Non-Judgment Day, just the Terminator. So... It like that's the palette that this movie takes from. Even from Aliens too, you get a little bit of the neon from the lights and the fluorescent lights, and it has the sort of backdrop that's so dark and gritty that like the grit on their faces almost translates over to that out of focus background. Very photographic, very fucking cinematic. This is like what like set the stage for a lot of the cinema today. It's just now it's all painted up with CG and shit.
And I think one of my favorite bits of trivia for this was that Bill Paxton and Lance Henriksen were, after the shooting was done for the day, would just drive around in their car, and they got pulled over once by a cop, and Lance Henriksen got pulled over and was just completely in character as Jesse the
entire
time.
Wow, holy shit, dude, that must be crazy.
And they said that you could just see the fear in the cop's eyes, like. And they got away with a warning, but still, it's like, am I going to have to shoot this guy? And if I do, is he going to stay down?
Oh, my God. This is I'm actually reading that one right now off of IMDb trivia.
That's just a great – I just feel like that's such a fantastic and a very – typical Lance Henriksen type of story.
The policeman became so unnerved questioning Jesse about his speeding that the officer became visibly uncomfortable, stepping back and placing his hand on his firearm. The obviously flustered officer decided to send them on their way rather than write them a ticket. Wow.
And without actually shooting anybody.
Yeah.
If that was today, we'd be reading the headlines. Tragic Hollywood actor shot tragically by police officer.
Oh, yeah. No, not even shot tragically. They would make up some shit about how he was a lunatic. We'd be all kinds of, like, violence in his past. Da-da-da-da. It would be, like, a big deal. Instead, it's, like, Lance Henriksen, who's, like, one of the coolest friggin' people ever. Like, he plays the scariest shit ever on screen, but he's, like... such a nice guy in real life, according to people I know who have met him, that it's pretty wild. Oh, my God. All right, yeah, these guys literally just watched them slit this chick's throat.
Yes.
And they're all just like, whoa, what the hell's happening here?
What
oh, man.
Fuck?
And she was totally, yeah, all of them, too, are like, what? Like, no one is, like, reaching for guns. No one is calling the cops. It's, like, full on. Yep, these lunatics just walked into our place. But it's like one of those weird frontier bars, you know, like there's nothing around this place.
you know, they're looking around going, where's Patrick Swayze when you need him?
Yeah, this is like being in Fallout and like a roving gang of vampires just showed up. The one guy's finally got a double barrel shotgun from behind the bar. But that's the other thing, too. It's like,
and
you know,
who does he end up shooting? Caleb,
yeah.
The one guy who's going to leave him alone.
Yeah, and that's because like they're fucking pathetic. It's like the prey never knows how to deal with the predator that is this intense.
Exactly.
And accordingly, too, I think there was something where, like, wasn't Bill Paxton, like, sick or something when they were shooting this? And, like, he was really, like, not even sure he was going to be able to do it, and they wound up giving him, like, a B-12 shot. And it lit him up. Like, that's why his performance is that crazy. And the scene even starts, like, again, very 80s, very kind of, like, establishing the way things are these days. It was almost, like, set up to be a music video. Like, it's got this John Parr, I believe, is the artist who famously did the St. Elmo's Fire song from St. Elmo's Fire.
And, yes.
You know, so it's like that. And, of course, the song's called Naughty Naughty, which is, like, lame as fucking hell. But the guitar riff when they first kick in is pretty badass. Yeah, this movie has that kind of quiet cool is what I'll call it going on. For anyone who's seen Airheads knows what that is. Gets its hands on more bumper than a body shop, folks. That's how that works. Yeah, so yeah, obviously the bar scene is like one of the most iconic scenes in this movie. The bar
Very much
assault.
So. The bar massacre, as it turns out to be.
Yeah. Now, we also haven't mentioned that Caleb's dad is played by Dollman Tommy Tomlinson. Another 80s tropey character, like if you haven't seen the Dollman movies, that'll definitely show you where film started, anyway. Tim Tomlinson, also. Tim Tomlinson, not Tommy Tomlinson. Tim Tomlinson. Yeah, like literally a guy the size of a doll. There's a lot of shots where it literally is just like a doll hanging onto the back of a car. It's crazy. But he plays Caleb's dad. Who played Caleb's sister? Anybody famous?
I think so.
Anyone who grew up to be somebody famous, you know? Sarah Colton, Marsha Leeds. What have you done, Marsha Leeds? Clicking on Marsha Leeds, and she's been in Near Dark.
Oh, and that's about it.
She was in Beaches. She was age 11 Hillary. That's another big one. If you saw Beaches. Oh, and Parenthood, the TV series, she was Cassett in one episode. So yeah, Near Dark was her big thing. Near Dark and Beaches.
Okay.
I would go with In Your Dark if I was bragging.
Yes, absolutely.
But I think more people actually saw Beaches, unfortunately, which is sad. Which is sad. But
it got better promotion.
Yeah, and Bette Midler.
That too.
Yeah. So, well, isn't there also, this is the first vampire movie where they do the whole, like, you can get a blood transfusion to get cured from vampirism? And, like,
yeah,
Caleb's dad figured that out.
Actually, I think Caleb figured that out because his dad's a vet.
Yeah.
So he's kind of got the medical equipment for animals, at least. Well, sure, why not?
Yeah, at this point, why the fuck not try?
But I guess that was one of the things that kind of hammered with me was that, so you're able to do a full blood transfusion for somebody? Really?
And he survived it? Like, every drop out, a whole new bunch of drops in.
And one person was enough for that? Okay, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a stretch. Let's just go with that.
But it's not the first, it's not the last anyway. If it was the first, it wasn't the last film to play with this idea of, like, let's try and transfuse all the blood out of somebody and get a whole bunch of new blood. Right away, I'm thinking of this alternate ending of 28 Days Later that they wound up not going with, where they wound up transfusing Jim's blood into the little girl's father so that she would still have her dad, and he wound up being just a zombie after that. That showed that you can try it, but both good guys won't survive, definitely. You know what I mean? So,
no, I just don't. again, that was one of the two places that kind of flipped this movie for me. I mean, the other one being, like, why did Caleb suddenly decide, I mean, other than self-preservation, to help them at the motel?
Yeah. I mean, well, maybe that's, to me, there's something that's supposed to be kind of alluring about this whole idea of, like, and I think this is part of the trope of these, like, 80s action movies of, like, you get absorbed into one of these, like, roving crews.
Yeah.
So this was his moment to finally do that, you know, say, all right, let me save them. They'll finally accept me, and now I'll be part of this thing that's bigger than me, that's better than what I've got going on back at the ranch with Dad and Sis, I guess. You know, it's like a way out.
But then, of course, the sister, Dad and Sis have been out roaming the roads looking for brother. Okay. And they finally all end up at the same motel.
Because that happens all the time.
Absolutely. Sure, why not?
That's Homer, our brother.
And Homer just happens to see little Sarah.
And wasn't he like, oh, I could finally have a little companion. Like, he kind of liked her, right? Like, yeah.
Yes. He's getting a Coke at the vending machine. She's in her bathroom. He's like, I want me some of that.
Yeah, and he's like, hey, that's my sister. You can't talk about my sister that way.
Pretty much.
Sort of. I guess.
It's like, no, you can't do that to her. It's bad enough you guys did it to me.
Oh, this is not cool, guys. This is not cool. So, damn it. Because he is kind of a whiny teenager brat in this movie. It's like, dude, yeah. What the fucking fuck are you doing?
Pretty much.
Oh, there's an untitled Catherine Bigelow project in pre-production right now.
But anyway, I just think that one of the things I actually liked about this movie was that it was he goes back to the family. He's not rebelling against the family at all.
Yeah. It was actually he just happened to be out on his own when this bullshit went down. You know, like, exactly. Hey, guys, I know you told me not to drift around because shit like this could happen. Well, shit like this happened. And I don't know what to do.
Help, Dad, help. But I think that actually worked out pretty well for that, as far as it went. And then they end up getting back to the house. But for some reason, he doesn't figure out that they're going to be able to track him down there.
Well, now, they don't do the, do they play up this whole, like, you're one of us now, we can feel where you are. It's more just they're like, yeah, dude, we found you.
It's like, there's not that much around.
And you left your wallet, dude. It had your address in it. You fucking told Homer your address and said, hey, guys, no matter what we do, we're going to avoid this place forever, right? Like, my folks' place, we're never going there.
Exactly. It's like, yeah, because they're totally going to agree to that, especially when you leave.
Yeah. You're not allowed. Like, that's the other thing, too, with these. Like, you know, these movies make it look like when you first meet the group, you're like, oh, it'd be so cool to join that group. But once you're in, man, it's like the mafia, yo. You made a commitment for life.
I don't think Caleb ever really thought it'd be so cool to be a vampire. I don't think he was ever really on board with that.
No, it was more like, it'd be so cool to fuck this blonde chick. So cool to fuck this hot blonde chick that I just met. And she was like, it'd be so fucking cool to finally drink some human blood. And then they also do the, he resisted becoming a full vampire by only feeding from her, right? Well, like, actually, it doesn't matter. Transfusion is how he gets out of it. But,
exactly.
Reluctant to kill, so she would kill and he would feed off her. And they were like, yo, you can't keep nursing him like this. What the fuck is wrong with you? Either he kills somebody tonight or we kill him. That's how this works.
Precisely.
At the Hideaway Motel.
Oh, which then the police surround.
And burn to the ground.
And blow giant holes in so that the light, they don't even know that they're vampires in there.
Yeah, it's otherwise just like that's part of their thing that they have to worry about. Like, we have to, like, doesn't he have, like, a mask that he makes, like, with the sunglasses?
He's got his goggles, and he's got, like, the nose protector.
Yeah, and it looks like a bird beak when he puts it on.
Yes.
And he said in this, okay, so in the same behind-the-scenes thing that the producer talked about, threatening Catherine Bigelow, he talked about how they all, you know, all actors do this. Like, they come up with a backstory for their character that might not even be in the script, but is just something that, like, they... Because, you know, you're supposed to, like, become this other person. So he had this image of being, like, a soldier dying, like a high-ranking soldier in the Confederate Army. And he's dying on the field of battle. And this harpy comes flying down and picks him up and is what turns him into a vampire. And so I'm like, oh, so he kind of carried that through with the nose thing in that goggles.
Gotcha.
He also said that when he got the prosthetic fingernails, that they were supposed to be more like claw-like, and he didn't like that they were so clean and sharp, so he took, like, actual nail clippers and started clipping them down,
hacking them down
to make them look more like like what they would look like fingernails, but he did it in, like, with, like, a really rough, like, edge, kind of, like, he made it look like he'd been, like, tearing them himself for, like, decades. I was like, holy shit, man, talk about people who really, like, commit, you know what I mean, to the job, you know?
Very
I think
much
there's
so.
Always a certain level of, like, types of characters that some people are like, you know, it's a little harder to take that seriously when you're playing it, you know. And I think when you see a movie like this, this is the kind of movie where all the actors were committed to everything, you know. And as I guess one of the talents Catherine Bigelow has is getting these kinds of performances out of her people.
I think what also helped probably with this was that a good number of the actors had worked together before.
Right, yeah. They actually...
Okay.
at the time, I guess, weren't Bigelow and Cameron like a romantic item? And
they were.
Oh, go ahead.
I mean, Paxton and Henriksen and Jenny Wright had all worked together.
He suggested it her, like, why don't you take this, like, packaged cast that I have that is in, like, all my stuff. And she was like, okay.
Sure.
And I think, I'm trying to think when we go into Point Break. Does Jenny Wright show up in that?
I don't think so.
I feel like she might have a small part in that somewhere, but no. I don't know. There are plenty of people in that fucking movie, though, that we'll talk all about. I'm looking at even, like, I guess it must be from the film stock they used and the cameras and the lenses and everything. Like, it has, like, I feel like there was, like, a signature look to a certain element of action movies from the 80s. And, like, Bigelow had it. Cameron probably established it to a degree, but I think there were other movies like Lethal Weapon, kind of like Donner, you know, a lot of people took it. So it must have been a combination of popular film stock and like the cameras that everybody was using. And I don't know.
this is obviously a lot darker, I feel, than a lot of your quote unquote typical 80s action film.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons.
Yeah, well, so much of it takes place at night. Exactly. In that regard.
So you don't normally see like the same kind of daylight action. The explosions are there. The being blown back by the gunshots is there. It's very much the stylized violence versus what you might see a little bit more now in terms of an attempt to look a little bit more realistic.
Yeah. Which often then comes with like bullet time and super advanced slow-mo and camera tracing bullet path kind of shit. This, like, when you see them in the motel room, it's actually like a bungalow, little motel shack kind of thing. They are kind of doing Western type stuff, like the gun, like the revolvers, the fanning back of the hammer and like just blowing holes through the walls. And it is like, you know, Last Stand at the Alamo type situation. The one thing that was super cool was when they blow the first. Actually, it was Bill Paxton blows a hole through the door with his shotgun, and the sunlight coming blasting in from that throws him back and sets his shirt on fire for a second. Like, it was like, holy crap.
All I could think of was like, you dumbass.
Yeah, well, it happens. It's like he's doing, like, you know, they have like limited options, and he's one of those like badass, like, first and worry about it later kind of guys.
Yes. Which makes you wonder how he survived as long as he did.
That's the whole thing with all of these movies. You're like, this is the way your character dies? Really? You're like, you've been alive for hundreds of fucking years, and this guy? Oh, man. That's crazy.
But I think, though, at the end of it, I mean, like, none of them are, I think, really sad to go, with the possible exception of Homer. I mean, Homer is devastated by the fact that he misses Sarah. Like, Sarah gets away, and that's his end. He runs out into daylight and explodes.
Yeah. Well, you imagine he's probably tried this before. It's more like not just that it's her, but that it's like, it's never going to work, is it, man? Ever, is it?
Exactly. At the end, you've got Jesse and Diamondback sitting in the car with the son, and they know they're done. And all they can say is good times.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, it seems there's a certain level, if you're not putting roots down anywhere, you don't have the secret stash with like 100 lifetimes worth of stolen money collecting dust. You know, they probably accept the fact that at some point, and they won't even realize it even the night before going to bed, that there will be this day that's their last day, you know. And
you definitely get the sense of timelessness for them, because they don't really keep track of how many years have gone by. They don't keep even track of what day is it. I mean, none of that matters.
Yeah,
one night after the next, and none of it all kind of blurs together for them. So at the end of the day, like, yeah, you know what, going out in a blaze, that's kind of what we kind of expected to have happen.
There's a certain, like, I don't know, I guess poetry about that too, that feels like the American Old West. Like, you're just like, hey man, every day is a fucking gift. Like, literally, we have no idea why not to just feel good about this. So yeah, word. It's like any day above ground with blood in your veins is a day to be proud of.
Exactly.
Yeah, so Near Dark, man. Fucking awesome vampire movie.
If you get a chance to check it out, I highly recommend you do so.
If by checking out it means like go on Amazon and fucking order that shit. Well, in fact, all right, I'll go there right now. Not that Amazon's paying us or anything, but hint, hint, hint. Maybe they want to. Amazon.com. Let's look up Near Dark. What do we got coming up right here? You want to go to the Fangirl Zone and go through their affiliate link. Oh, you can watch it. Amazon Video. if you have a Starz subscription, you can watch. Oh, no, wait. Whoa. What is this? No, yeah, this is the movie. Okay, the cover makes it look like they're remaking it into a TV show. And I was going to say, what?
It looks like a Twilight.
That's your cover, the Blu-ray? Yep, yes. That's the Blu-ray box. Holy shit, it almost looked like the guy from True Blood. It doesn't even look like Adrian Pazdar on the cover. What's his name? Why can't I remember the True Blood guy's name? Anyway, the guy that Anna Paquin married.
Yes.
What's it called? Anyway, Near Dark. If you want it on DVD, it's $30, but on Blu-ray, it's only $13. Look at that. No, DVD Prime. I guess there's a $48 version too. Holy shit! Or $15 on Blu-ray. I think the Blu-ray is the best way to go. $15. But why? Why is this DVD standard def with the same Twilight cover that you've got now? I don't know why.
But I would definitely recommend. If you get a chance, check it out.
Well, it did say it was viewable with a Starz subscription on Amazon Prime.
You could probably do the trial for free.
Yeah, somehow. I know there's you savvy ones out there who know how to fucking do everything for free. Figure that shit out. Send us a note. We'll post it. We'll give you credit for it. Yeah, so Near Dark, After Hours, definitely that's the kind of movie. We could probably talk about this for another 3 hours if we wanted to. If we actually knew some other people who had seen it, who wanted to talk about it. Holy crap, it would have been a crazy conversation, but definitely... I don't know.
If you have other recommendations for movies that you feel like no one else has seen, let us know.
Yeah, absolutely. Shoot us a note at hollow9podcast@gmail.com or just find our Facebook page. We're the Hollow 9 Network on Facebook. You can follow us on the Twitter machine at hollow9cast. And yeah, man, and especially if you see things, we'll post the list of the ones that we've already done, that we've got in the can, that are on their way out, ones that we're going to be doing next. And if you see some glaring gaps in that list, let us know. And yeah, man, if you ever want to join the fun, shoot us a note, let us know what you do, give us some kind of audition. You could be the third chair talking about a movie you recommend. That's the kind of network Hollow 9 is. Anyway, well, this has been fun, man. I'm glad.
Absolutely.
It's like I remember when I finally bought the DVD and I was telling my friend at work about it. And as we were ending the conversation, someone from another department that I've only worked with every once in a great while, I barely knew the dude's name. He walked by and goes, "Oh, you guys are talking about Near Dark? Oh, that movie's awesome." So that's the, that's the kind of movie this is. All right. That's what we're saying. And so now that you've heard it from us, go forth and... plenty of blood shall you drink. Check it out, and thanks for listening. You've been listening to the Hollow 9 Network, bringing you the very best in fan-made media. Follow us on Twitter at Hollow9Cast. That's Hollow, the number 9, I-N-E, cast. Email us at hollow9podcast@gmail.com or find us at our home site, hollow9.podomatic.com. Be sure to check out our affiliate, fangirlzone.com. Find us on Facebook. Rate and review us on iTunes. Join in the fun. Hollow 9.
Spinning circle of doom.
Spinning.
Oh my god.
So, say hello to the night!
Everything that I was supposed to do today, it didn't happen.
Because of editing?
No, because I was trying to avoid editing. So I'm like, fuck it, I'm gonna make potato soup. And so we had lost pork chops and fried potatoes, and I made potato soup and green beans. And I made a lot.
Fucking productive,
really
you.
I really didn't want to edit.
I will probably stay up and edit after we record.
See, I did carry out Indian food for dinner tonight.
Nice. Damn.
I've never had Indian food. I'm
what?
First of all, I don't have a gallbladder. So
okay.
I'm really, really afraid to
I
try
think that food. Could actually be an issue, right? I mean, that's actually...
It's an issue with a lot of food. So that's why it scares me.
Problematic, as they say.
Yeah, this was partly just celebration that we got our tax refund back. So we can't...
Oh, nice. It's Indian food for tax.
Nice to get tax back.
Hold on a second. Let me grab a pen for a second. You guys can talk.